We just stepped on their face with a hobnail boot and broke their nose.
How about them fucking dogs? That's what I told them.
Hope it didn't take that long, yeah. Go dogs.
Go dogs. Welcome back to the 100 Sanford podcast. It's been about three, maybe 4 weeks, but we back in the house.
We bite in time.
We got G-Day coming up. We got all these good things happening with the University of Georgia, but we are back right in time, back in the saddle. It's Lovelace. It's Foss. We got coffee getting ready to come on, nice and hot and ready to go. But Foss, what's going on, baby?
Ain't nothing, man. I'm kind of jealous, man. You got the good salt pepper going. You got the nice, you know, the nice beard going. I like it, man. My man said, we ain't doing no Beijing. We ain't doing none of that. We're keeping the nice salt and pepper and keeping it look fresh. We ready for G-Day, you know, see what these young dogs going to be getting into. I'm going to be in the place to be. Coffee's going to be in the place to be. And we're going to see what's happening.
Yeah, man. Look, I usually don't even let this grow like this, man. Sometimes I'll put the jet black on it. But I said, you know what, man? Look, the kids is at spring break. Yeah, you know what I'm saying?
Ricky Beverly going right there.
I'm gonna let it go El Natural, is what they say.
You dig, I could dig it.
Yeah, man. You guys are going down to G-Day. I am real jealous. I gotta be up here. I mean, even though my son got football going on, so that kind of keeps me engaged. And of course, we're gonna watch G-Day on TV, but we wanted to be in the house in the worst way. Actually had him back in Pittsburgh last week, getting ready to see his cousin. Then they canceled practice, so he's itching at the bit. Then he comes down the steps yesterday, right before the eclipse in the morning. He slips. I don't know, not yesterday. What was it, Tuesday? Was the eclipse? Monday was the eclipse? What day was the eclipse, man? One of them days. He slipped, fell, hit his back. So little dude, you know, hurt his back a little bit. So he's on the mend right now.
He's killing me right now. Except, man,
he's trying to get back to play on Sunday. So we're going to be ready to go. But yeah, man, we had some bad weather. Took us out a week. Some travel that took us out a week. Matter of fact, two days ago, we had the earthquake up here in Glen Allen, Virginia. Me and my wife sitting on the couch. 10:45, still starts seeing everything vibrate. I'm like, what is that? I thought something was happening to the crib. Nah, man. Found out the next day, a little earthquake, but we back. We settled.
The last time I felt some shaking, it was because of a earthquake in Virginia. And I felt it down here in Atlanta. And I thought I was tripping. I was like, this can't be. We don't have that in Georgia, but evidently we do.
Yeah, facts, man. I mean, we were sitting there and we were just talking. The dog was like on my lap or whatever. And I was like, what in the world? Like, I thought it was like, I thought my son was upstairs playing or doing something with like some type of vibration game. But the whole, foundation was vibrating. So for all those people who experience earthquakes, I've now experienced that. So I'm with you. I kind of feel what that feels like. So props go out to y'all, especially out in California, to be handling that kind of stuff all the time. That ain't for love. I'm going to let you know. But with that being said, we got G-Day getting ready to come up. We got G-Day on Saturday. Everybody has been itching. The basketball's over. Caitlin Clark, applaud you. Dawn Staley, double applaud you. National championship. UConn, the men's basketball team, applaud y'all. But it's football season, baby. We know baseball's going on. We know.
We got to rewind a little bit and give a shout out. We got to give a shout out to the Hoop Dogs. The men, they made it to the final four of the NIT. Yeah, the final four of the NIT. They just met up with a team of too much. It was Seton Hall.
They faced
Seton Hall a little too much. They got it together toward the end to make a little run in the postseason, and we're proud of them. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully, that's a stepping stone for Mike White and crew. and they can keep it going, keep the momentum going for next year.
Facts. Yeah, you got a lot of teams that opted out of the NIT, especially the ones that I guess their coaches were already submitted. You know, they wanted that extra time to jump into the portal. But I applaud Mike White in Georgia for actually saying, no, let's play this thing, get some more practice time, get these guys playing together, building that unity that needs to be built. Because that's really what needs to happen with that team. And they got a lot of talent. It's just too short a time to kind of mesh everything together to actually have a top flight competitor and know how to win. So hopefully this takes them into, 2024-25 with the ability to understand how to win close games, big games, and gets them into the actual tournament. Because they got the talent, man. You know, the state of Georgia has too much talent for Georgia to pass up on.
They've been recruiting too.
Yeah. So, yeah, they big time recruits coming in. Yeah, big time recruits coming in. But like I said, we are now in the season, the window for college football. A lot of universities are having their spring games. It is G-Day in Athens, Saturday, 1 p.m. It'll be on ESPN. It's going to be streamed live on the SEC Network. But our boy Foss is going to be in the house. Foss, what are you looking for from this G-Day? You played in it. You played in the, spring games and everything else. But what are you looking for as a now fan of the game?
What am I looking for? I'm looking for some of these. I'm always looking to see how the young guys are going to react. You know, it's their first, especially the rooks, some of them first big game atmosphere. You know, you're going to be in the stadium, the proverbial lights are on. You know, you got the fans out there, the student body. And it's going to be mano a mano, You're going against some of the best players in the country. Like, that's a privilege. Like, you're going against some of the best players in the country at practice. You know what I mean? You're going against possibly the best roster in the country, and you get to face them at practice to sharpen your sword. And so I'm looking forward to seeing what the young guys do. Get a little bit, but not too much, of Carson. See him throw it a little bit, and then put him back in the glass, put him in the case, put him in the case till September. what I mean?
Call that boy Bubble Boy. John Travolta, Bubble Boy.
Hey, put him in the case. I don't want no haps, no issues. I want to see what we're replacing some NFL talent on the defensive side of the ball. We're replacing a number one corner. We're replacing two safeties that are, two safeties, nickel, whatever you like to call them, Tyke, replacing those guys. I want to see who takes over for them. Just looking to see who replaces Marius, gonna see who replaces Brock. It's a lot of questions that need to be answered heading into this season. But like I've said before on many a show, I trust this staff so much to get it right. So I'm excited.
It's funny, man, because as I was sitting there thinking about, okay, what would I be looking for in this game? One of the things that popped up, obviously, is it's the young guys. Everybody wants to see the new shiny toys that come into Athens. They want to see the young guys that they have what it takes, the four, the five stars that are now part of this fraternity of the University of Georgia football team. At the same time, I think everybody is kind of like biting and chomping at the bit to kind of see, okay, what is this new offense fully under Carson, right? Because there is no more Brock. There is no more Ladd. There is no more Rosamie Jack Saint. No more Milton. No more Dejon Edwards. It's Carson's show. Everything is going to be built around his skill sets, what he does best for this team to win best. They got a great running game. Obviously, they got a stable running back, stable wide receivers and tight ends. But this team is truly only going to go as far as he can go in 2024/25. And like you mentioned, let him get in there, get his work, I want to see the top threes from him, man. I want to see him be calculated. I want confidence and I want command. I want him to exude nothing but I'm the alpha dog and this is my squad and we going to roll as far as I roll. That's what I really want to see from him. And then, like you said, put him on the sideline, get Stockton in there, let him do his thing. And anybody else who wants to sling the rock that day, because I don't think we need to see too much from Carson. But like you mentioned, I think the second thing I really wanted to see, you mentioned you trust the coaching staff, mm-hmm. but it is a new coaching staff in many lights. I want to see what the running game now looks like without Dale McGee. I want to see Williams and Robinson on the back end and how they're coaching up these defensive backs and coaching up these corners. Not that Kirby has left the building, because Kirby has his fingerprints on everything. Muschamp has his fingers on everything, even though he's kind of taking a step back. I want to see, though, if they're coaching these corners up any different to now attack the ball, where we have not seen that many picks in the last 4, 5, 6 years underneath Kirby Smart. I want to see if these cornerbacks are any bit different than what they have been, because I think that's going to play a lot into this season as well. We still don't have that alpha dog on the defensive line, in my opinion, outside of Mikel Williams, obviously, coming off the edge. But we don't have that staple on the inside like Carter was on the inside. You know what I mean? Somebody that you knew was, you know, that guy, that dude that you're not going to run up the middle. So I still think the pass defense is going to be probably the crux of this team to kind of go as far as we want to go. So, but yeah, I'm like you, man. I want to see the young guys. I want to see them develop. I want to see what they have. But you played in this game, so you would know a little bit more than what most would. How much does that play into the confidence of these young guys?
You want to do good. You want that steak dinner. You don't want to be any Wendy's. You want that steak dinner as the winning team. You know, I think they still do. I can't remember or not. But you want to be on the inside of G-Day. And it's just good fun, man. It's typically I imagine the schedule is still the same. That's typically the last, you know, spring practice, so to speak. I'm not sure if that's still the case, but you know, you get to have a good time afterwards, you know, kick it with your fellas and, you know, have a good time and look forward to summer practice. So I'm looking forward to seeing it, man. They're going to be really good at linebacker. Offense, I think they're still going to be explosive. They got some really good receivers. You know, I was hearing, you know, I saw some words about they asked somebody, like, who's the toughest guard, the toughest, cover and on the team. They was talking about his name slipped me that quick. Our offensive number 6, love it. They was talking about how quick and fast and shifty he was, how hard he was to cover. And I imagine, you know, just knowing how those guys, just knowing the pedigree and how those guys train up there, you can imagine somebody like that putting in work this offseason. He's just ready to explode. You know what I mean? He's seeing, you know, how these other cats are. They're like, man, I can do that. You know what I mean? There's still more. Mm-hmm. You know, he was productive last year, but I can see somebody that wanted more. You know what I mean? And you got to look at it like this too. Now, it's a lot of targets opening up. 19 took up a lot of targets because 19 was
did.
19, yes, he did. 19 was him. Now, ain't nobody got no excuses. You know, it's out there for the taking. Get open. You know what I mean? Because 15 will put it on you. We already know 15. 15 is like that. You know what I mean? The man, they give him the man Lamborghinis, trucks. So get open. You know what I'm saying? 19 dominated a lot of touches, as he should have. And I'm glad. I wish he could have got the ball more. You know, but you know, he's not there anymore. He's about to get the NFL check. And so it's a lot of production opening up. and it's there for the taking. Like, who wants it? Who wants it? And we about to find out. I know 86 gonna want it. You know, what you gonna want it, six? And what you gonna do, young bud? You gonna want it 17? Like, it's there. It's there. You know what I mean? 11. You run a 4, you run a 3-9. What you wanna do? what you wanna do? It's a lot of, you know, it's a lot of, you know, production that just left that building. You know what I mean?
Fuck.
Who's gonna take
it? Man, we must be thinking on the same wavelength, man, because when I think about the offense, and when I mention the three guys that left, I mentioned, you know, 19, Bowers, I mean, all-world tight end. I mentioned McConkey. I mentioned Rosemary Jack Saint. But when you talk about Bowers, most people don't even really realize how much of the offense was geared around him. And now how much of the field does get opened up for some of these receivers. So for the past few years, everybody's been talking about Georgia can't recruit the top flight five-star twitchy receiver. What five-star twitchy receiver was coming to play to have targets taken away by 19, who was the greatest tight end in college history, in my opinion? Now, like you mentioned, it's open. It's open season, baby. You got Lovett. You got Ra-Ra Thomas. You got Arian Smith. You got Bell. You got Anthony Evans. You got all these young guys that are now chomping at the bit to say, well, I'm that dude. So the other thing that I wanted to see from this offense was, who was going to step up in spring and in the summer to let Carson know, I'm your dude. When it comes to it, when it got to be that first down, I'm that guy. That big play receiver, I'm that guy. I'm that guy that's going to be accountable, that guy that's going to be there on time, that guy that's going to make sure I make you look good. Because let's be honest, Carson Beck is coming in this season with a target on his back as one of the top quarterbacks in the country, but he's also coming into this season as a Heisman hopeful. In the back of his mind, I know he's got it, you know, written down somewhere, checked off in back there in one of the filing cabinets of his brain, I want to win the Heisman. Well, I'm throwing the ball and I'm slinging the rock to whoever's going to make me look good. Hopefully he's going to make us look good for a national title, but I'm saying in a secondary, you know, kind of little selfish aspect of it, that's how quarterbacks are. They don't throw the ball to just anybody. They throw the ball to somebody who's going to catch the rock. Somebody who's going to make plays within the confines of the offense. And this is that time frame for some of these young guys to step up and show that I can be dynamic. You talked about 11. You talked about Arian Smith. Let's be honest. 3-9 speed, all world, like you mentioned. But he's had a little trouble catching the rock at times. You talk about Dominic Levick. Same thing. You know, he came over from Missouri. Had a little trouble at times catching the rock, staying on his feet, that sort of thing. We're losing dependable guys. Who's going to step up to be dependable? That's what I want to see in this spring, along with battling against some of these top flight cornerbacks and Everett on the other side. You got Ellis Robinson, the fourth over there, who's wearing number one. Guys don't wear number one unless they that dude. I can't wait to see that battle in spring. I cannot wait. And we've seen the pictures of him picking off a pass, diving like he was Superman. You know, that George Pickens picture that, you know, that people remember when he was a freshman making diving catches. And that's a cornerback doing that. So I cannot wait to see the battles that we got going on between the offensive side of the ball and the defensive side of the ball, especially with Carson Beck and these young receivers. When it comes to the running game, I think you might be frozen. I think I might have lost you. Oh, there you go, Foss. All right. When it comes to the running game, I want to see a little bit of that too. We got to get these guys back into the fold. I mean, it is RBU, and I'm ready to see what the Robinsons can do along with Andrew Paul. But now you bring in Trevor Etienne. I want to see what they got drawn up for Trevor Etienne, because I think he is a wild card in this offense that can make everything off balance for defenses. What are your thoughts on that?
Let me tell you, it's funny you say that. Let me look up something in my phone. Hold on. I had a buddy of mine, so I trust his opinion. He's a former, you know, SEC player, former you know, professional player, NFL player. He, you know, friend of somebody on the staff. He didn't go to Georgia, but he was able to go see one of the first, you know, practices of the spring. And he went to one of the rivals, but he keeps it real. And he had hit me one night, and I was in the movies, and so I didn't get a chance to respond. And I just hit him like a couple days late, and I was like, man, my bad. I forgot to call you back. He said, I ain't want nothing. I said, I was probably calling you about how good Georgia looked at practice. And I said, how did they look? I asked him if they had on pads. He said, no, they have on pads. He said, but just shorts. He said, cuz they transferred from Florida, the running back, he gonna have a big year. This is from him. He said Beck looked like he will have another good year. He said defense is gonna be young in the secondary, but the front and the backers should be elite as usual. He said, now this was interesting to me because I don't hear much about this kid, and which doesn't mean anything. It's just, you know, I'm busy, and of course, I have other things going on, so I don't get all the what the ladies call the tea. He said Todd Bowles' son gonna have a big year. Troy Bowles at linebacker.
I've been waiting for that. Yeah, I've been waiting for that.
He said he was working with the ones when I was there. He said they might be a little concerned about corner. And he's like, man, he said Kirby's the GOAT. He's like, sitting in staff meetings, he holds everybody accountable. Don't care who you are. And he was saying, he was talking about he went to another school, another SEC school practice, you know, before. He said, same level of intensity. He said, but the Jimmys and the Joes are just very different. You know, Georgia got dudes, man. He said, Georgia got dudes. That's typically the difference. You know what I mean? Yeah. And he's like, hey, like Kirby expects greatness from everybody. He was talking about how Kirby, what Kirby expected from the recruits, their respect level, their intensity level, their level of paying attention. Recruits can be on the phone and all that stuff. Like, you know, they're building something and have built something very different up there, you know, and it's noticeable.
Yeah, man, that's some good stuff, because I mention it a lot. Just talking to different fans, you know, I'm in the Virginia area, but I got people that follow the Big Ten, follow the SEC, ACC, whatever it is. They always ask, what's the difference? Since I'm following the team so intimately, it's like you said, I mean, everybody's got Jimmys and Joes. Everybody's got players, four stars, five stars, but there's just something different in terms of what you create in terms of culture. I know we talk about it often. If you listen to the show, we talk about culture often here, but it's one of those things where either you adopt it or you check out, and you better find out relatively quickly before you sign your name on a dotted line what you're getting involved in. It's like going to, you know, you say, hey, I want to go into the military. Well, what part of the armed forces are you going into? Not to disrespect any particular one, but some of them are a little bit different than others, you know? So you better realize that you want to get involved with this team that wears that G on the side of their helmet. You better be a different type of dude with a different type of mentality. And not only that, your goals have to go far beyond Georgia to want to play at Georgia, in my opinion. Like, your goals have to be so lofty. Like, you have to really truly believe that you're that dude, that you were built different, that you were made different, that you are different, to put that G on right now. Because you can't be one of these guys that, well, oh, you know, oh shucks, I'm a legacy. Or, oh, you know, I just wanna wear that black and red. Nah, man, you gotta be made a little bit different, with a little bit different of an edge and a mindset to wanna play there. because like you mentioned, the intensity is always going to be, you know, for top flight coaches, the SEC, Big Ten, don't matter what it is. The intensity of practice is going to be there, but the level of accountability, like you mentioned, may not be the same. And that's personal accountability down to the coaches and everything else involving the entire program. And I think that's what's making Georgia different. We had our boy, what's his name? God, he's Josh, that was on talking about, you know, how Georgia looks right now. Kirby being the number one, you know, number one coach, the program being the number one program. Everything is now in Georgia's hands to kind of run with this thing. And I think going into the new college football playoff era, I want to see dominance. And I think we can really see dominance. I think Kirby actually himself wants to make a statement. I think he wants Georgia to make that statement coming out of the spring, out of the summer for 2024 and beyond. Okay, you guys wanted to play off and try to, you know, try to make it a little bit easier for everybody. Then we're going to give you, we're going to turn it up a notch. And I think that's something that definitely can be done. But when you go back to that running game, we saw what Trevor Etienne could do when he was at Florida. We saw him against Georgia. I mean, he was basically their only dude along with Ricky Pearsall, right? And so we know the kid's explosive, but how explosive do you think he can be behind a Georgia offensive line with a top-flight quarterback, with receivers on the outside that can stretch the field? This boy, like you mentioned, or like I don't even know who the person is. You can tell me later. But like you mentioned, he can be different in this offense. So when you start looking at Heisman candidates, quite honestly, Beck is one of those dudes. But I've actually read where ETN could be a sleeper as a Heisman candidate as a running back and all you know, all world, all purpose running back. So I'm looking forward to that. You did mention, though, on the defensive side of the ball, you mentioned Todd Bowles' son, Troy Bowles. I've been waiting for that. He's a coach's son, you know what I'm saying? And so I remember him coming out, five-star, you know, was going to jump right into the into the defense, many people thought. And like you mentioned earlier, I mean, you mentioned all the time, you don't just do that at Georgia. You just don't jump into the defense and become that dude. And I don't think it's not because he doesn't have the talent. It's just that he had a lot of dudes in front of him. And this defense is just going to be, in my opinion, young, but explosive and ferocious, because they got a lot of dudes that can fly on that side of the ball. And that's why I said my only concern is that defensive line. Can they hold water and play much better up front than they played last year to allow this defense in the back eight to just flow, just do what they do?
Mm-hmm. I think they're going to be really good at linebacker. You know, so fast. You know, you got five back there, 33, you know, fast. You know, guys that run to the ball, sideline to sideline. That's how Kirby wants them. If you don't run the 100 meter in high school, I don't think he wants you. You know what I mean? He gotta be a fast 100 meter too. You know, that's what he wants. He wants those guys to, you know, sub 11, you know, playing linebacker. You know what I mean?
Did CJ switch to number three? Did he switch to the iconic number three?
I'm not sure. I haven't checked out, you know, the roster numbers yet. I haven't had a chance. So we'll see.
Yeah, I could have sworn I read somewhere where he was switching to number three, which, again, a lot of people compare him to Roquan Smith. They compare not just his athletic ability, but his leadership, his toughness, and the way he holds people accountable. The stories are phenomenal about that kid. And when you got that middle piece, when you got that linebacker controlling everything, that middle linebacker that runs the defense, making the calls, and he's on point, your defense can be on point. You mentioned, you know, like Kirby likes everybody fast. He likes everybody explosive. And you know, we'd be remiss not to forget about Malachi Starks on the back end, you know, coming back. I mean, this team is so loaded. It's kind of scary at times. Like it makes you want to say, like you mentioned earlier with Carson Beck, put him in glass, put everybody in glass. Cause I just want to see greatness all come together and just handle work.
Right. And you know, it's, put them in glass and just let's see what happens this fall, man. You know, I don't want anybody. I want to be full tilt all year, man. Full tilt, buddy. Gotta have it.
I agree.
Some good game. It's the schedule this year. It's a beast.
Yes.
It's a beast.
I mean, you start off with Clemson, you know what I'm saying? But then when you mention going down to Texas, going down to Alabama, still having to play your rival in Florida, still having to play a rival in Tennessee, Auburn, it's a monster schedule. And it's
me and Charles Grant was talking last night about road trips, talking about, you know, going to Bama, you know, got rooms already set for Austin and stuff like that. Hey,
I think you're breaking up a little bit, Foss.
It's one of those there.
You're breaking up. You're breaking up, Foss.
Froze up a little bit.
Where you froze up a little bit. You got a little bad weather down there? You get some of our weather? Oh, I think he's going out a little bit. But he's talking about the schedule. And Georgia does have a tough schedule, man. I mean, when you think about it, you start off with Clemson. You know, you get the little break of Tennessee Tech, and that's the way it's always done. You have that second game, that second team that comes in, kind of gives your guys a little bit of breather. But, man, it starts to turn on. You got to go to Kentucky. You got Alabama. You got Auburn, Mississippi State. My God. Texas, then Florida, Ole Miss, Tennessee. They run the gauntlet on this schedule. I mean, I might go so far to say this might be the greatest team in college football history. I know I'm going to catch flack for that. But I'm a homer. I know it, and I'll be that. But when it comes down to it, that schedule, along with having to get to the college football playoffs, along with having to go through that gauntlet, maybe win another national title, that would be insane. That'd be an insane thing that's happened. You back, Foss?
I'm back. Can you hear me?
I hear you. Perfectly clear. I was just going on about the schedule myself, but you said you got your rooms reserved?
Me and Charles Grant was talking about just these various places that we could road trip to or trip to. You got Texas, you got Bama, you know, that's two good ones right there. And I was just saying before I got disconnected was that this is one of those seasons where you can actually have opportunity to show and prove. Like, it's put up a shut up time. You know, you like you said, got Clemson. Like, who plays Clemson, Bama, and Texas in the same year?
And Ole Miss.
You know what I mean?
Don't forget then, Lane. You got to go see Lane.
And Ole Miss. you can't forget Lane.
Right.
You know? They're crazy.
Everybody's loaded up. Everybody's loaded up in the portal.
Loading. Listen. And, you know, I would imagine, you know, we don't know.
I'm losing you again, Foss. I'm losing you again.
We got a schedule ahead of us.
Yeah, we got a tough one, man. We got a tough schedule, but it's something that you adopt. You know what I'm saying? It's something that you look forward to. If you're a competitor, you don't run from this type of schedule. If you're a competitor and you go to Georgia or you go to any of these SEC schools, you don't want to play, you know, the Tennessee Techs that you got to play week two. You don't want to play Bowling Green. You want to play these top-notch teams. That's what you want to do. You want to line up against top competition and play some of these top teams that shows everybody exactly who you are. That's the way I would look at it. But we are now graced with the presence of a great man. He
a
goes
great by man. Let's go. Somebody what's tell up, him brother? Right. Oh man. Not much. Sorry, I'm a little late. I'm scrambling. I got back from the eclipse. Late last night, drove all the way from Fort Stockton, Texas to Durango, Colorado yesterday with a trailer behind. So it was about a 12-hour push, but we made it. And woke up this morning, and I've been playing catch-up on stuff for Players Lounge, Dog Central, and getting ready to get on an airplane tomorrow morning and head off to Athens for G-Day. So lots of exciting stuff going on.
Yes, if you guys don't understand, if you're just listening to it on a podcast, obviously if you're watching on video, you can see it's Graham Coffee. But it is the silky sound, smooth, coming from Graham Coffee. He got the new mic and everything else. He showed us the new mic, was holding up the new mic, and he was even singing to us. I mean, he was giving us melodies and things like that. I don't know if y'all can handle that. I don't know if y'all can handle that. Now, don't do, hey Graham, if you're gonna do it, you gotta do it right, man. You gotta be the Alan Thicke.
I can't do that. I'm not trying to go viral for the wrong reason.
No, man. We're just breaking down G Day, man. Our thoughts on G Day, our thoughts on what we wanted to see. Then Foss had to bring up the Illmatic schedule that we must face, which I mean I'm looking at personally that if they go through that gauntlet and win the national title and they go undefeated, it's the greatest team that's ever touch the field in college football, in my opinion. But what are your thoughts on G-Day? And then we can get into your thoughts on that schedule.
I think G-Day is – it's always interesting because it's like I think that G-Day can be informative. Any spring game can be informative, especially because Georgia does still – you know, I mean, some of these teams have turned their spring games into 7-on-7, basically. G-Day is still – you know, it's still pretty real. Like, you're not seeing quarterbacks take live contact, but other than that, it is a real football game with real officials and all of that good stuff. I look at it as an opportunity to see, you know, young players that we haven't seen, whether they redshirted last year or they were, you know, early enrollees this year. I also look at it as a chance for us to kind of like, it's a progress report, right? It's not a report card. You know, you don't get report cards till the season, but it is a progress report in some respects on, like, I want to see, you know, how does Gunnar Stockton look compared to this time last year or compared to the Orange Bowl? Is he hanging in the pocket? Is he getting through reads? Is he, you know, developing as a pocket passer? Because we know he can run. I want to see things like, you know, what's going on with some of these young offensive linemen that just, you know, Georgia just signed 6 offensive linemen. They signed like over a ton, literally a 2,000-pound ton of offensive linemen. Do any of those guys look impactful already? You know, Daniel Calhoun's the one we've heard the most about this spring. Receivers, you know, there's all these new faces in the receiver room from the portal to Sakobi White has been tearing it up this spring, you know, true freshman. Like, those are all things that we can check in on. I think probably number one on the UGA fan wish list, if I was creating it, is are we going to see like somebody that looks disruptive in the middle of the defensive line? Because I think that was missing last year. You know, how do these guys set the edge? Is something that you always want to look for, but like, let's be honest, I don't expect Georgia to really run the ball, you know, in many situations, at least historically speaking, they have not run the ball a ton on G Day because guys tend to get hurt on running plays more often than pass plays. So, those are some of the things that I'm looking for. And I think probably every informed Georgia fan will have their own list of guys they want to check in on, right?
Yeah. We had already talked about that. The same things you had already talked about that you just brought up. I just think that in my personal opinion, I want to see who comes out of this thing as the bona fide leader on both offense and defense. Like Foss already mentioned, it's no longer Brock Bowers. He's no longer there. Even though Brock wasn't the leader, so to speak, but everything kind of flowed through him. I want to see, this is Carson's team. There is no Brock Bowers. There is no Ladd McConkey. There is no Kendall Milton. There is no, you know, there is no Cedric Von Prawn, Granger on the front line. There's none of those guys. Those are national, back-to-back national champions that just walked out the door that are going into the NFL. I want to see Carson take full control of this team along with the receiving core. Who's going to step up and be that dude that he can trust going down the line through this gauntlet schedule, quite honestly, along with who's going to be the bell cow for this team in terms of running the football. We just talked about Trevor Etienne. He's going to be phenomenal. We know that. With the spacing, with the way the offense is set up, he's going to be phenomenal. But who's going to be his counterpart in the backfield? Who's going to be that guy that steps up and says, okay, I can be the thumper and you can be the lightning in this offense? I want to see that. But yes, we did also mention, Graham, I mean, at least I did, that defensive front. We need to see something. We need to see some explosion out of that defensive front, because if they get any type of aggressive activity, if they get any type of consistency that they did not have last year, that back end can be quite dangerous.
Yeah. I mean, you know, there are still, I think, some questions on the back end, but like I look at it as Georgia probably has at least four boundary corners that would start anywhere, you know, and then you got Starks at safety and you got all these young freaks at linebacker. Like, you still got to figure out Star. You still have to figure out the other safety position. But I think we've seen historically when it comes to Georgia and defense, like, if you throw enough talent at a problem, that problem gets solved. Yeah, exactly. So I think, yeah, it's like, man, you know, if Georgia can generate pass rush, you know, we saw Mykel Williams in the Orange Bowl, like, you know, really play as like a true stand-up pass rusher and have six pressures in that game and two sacks after having, I think, only like 16 or 18 pressures to that point in the season. We know Jalen Walker can really get after the quarterback. Like, there are guys that we know can come off the edge. Damon Wilson seems to be an emergent player. You know, he was the number one player in his class at one point with one of the ranking services. Like, that's another edge guy that I think is going to be an impactful player for Georgia. But, like,
it'll be slippery.
What's the story in the middle? That's the million-dollar question. Is it Jordan Hall? Is it Kristen Miller? Is it, you know, it needs to be a combination of a lot of guys, obviously, because Georgia's always rotated heavily in those spots. But, like, does Nazir Stackhouse look more like 2022 Nazir Stackhouse when, you know, it seemed like he was just at a little – obviously playing next to Jalen Carter makes a lot of people look good. But that's what Georgia needs, is that guy that, like, you know, starts demanding double teams before they go to Tuscaloosa at the end of September.
Well, it has to figure out. Sometimes you have to get used to being the guy. You know, when you start taking more reps than you're typically than you're used to taking, you know, are you gonna go up, or are you gonna go down, or are you gonna stay the same? You know, we gonna find out a lot about some of those guys because they have to play now. You know what I mean? You have to play more. Right. Then there's more opportunity to do good or bad now than there was. You know, the sample size was very small when you're a backup behind, you know, first round players, or you're playing next to first round players. When you're the guy, the microscope is closer.
Yeah, for sure. And I think, like, you know, there have been instances. You know, I think a lot of people in the, like, media, particularly in the national media, they kind of want to, like, dismiss spring games sometimes because it's like, A, it's work to go and review all of them for all these teams, but B, like, you know, it's like, oh, well, it's just a glorified scrimmage, and it really is one of 15 practices, right? So we are not seeing the full picture, and I think it's important to keep that context. But, like, remember 2021 G-Day when A.D. Mitchell – came out and, like, balled out, and then what happened? You know, 8 months later, he's catching a touchdown pass in Indianapolis that put Georgia ahead in the national title game. So there is a correlation.
even little things like, you know, like I'm going to tell you a name that, you know, he wasn't dominant or anything, but he flashed and he, you know, he got on the field, and that was Mekhi Muse, like his spring game. He was like, he like balled out in the spring game. It's easy to be like, well, it's just G-Day, but he was able to get on the field that year. He was able to make some plays that year. You know what I mean? So it's not a complete wash. You know,
that's a good day.
Because you're still out look on that one, George. Huh?
I said that was a good look on that one. I forgot all about Mekhi Muse and how he did.
Yeah. I keep like, who is that? And it was like, I don't know who is Muse? Who's 87? And listen, you know, and he didn't get lost, and he's a 5'5" guy that didn't get lost in the portal nonsense. He played his way onto another roster last year for Georgia.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, G-Day can be a little telling for some players.
Well, I mean, look, let's be honest.
It's not the same for every group in G-Day. You know what I mean? But some of those groups of players, positions, you can still find out a lot, just like you do from any other practice.
No, that's right. I mean, look, Carson Beck was 15 to 22 for 231 in the TD last year on G-Day, but he started out, I think, like 11 for 11. And, you know, Brock Vandegrift, it wasn't great, right? It wasn't bad, but it wasn't great. Same with Gunnar Stockton. And it's just like, look where we are with all those guys now. You know, it is – and I think for young players – to your point, George, like for young players or for guys that are trying to carve out a role for themselves, like this is the biggest crowd they've ever played in front of. You know, this is the first nationally televised. I mean, obviously this is a streaming game on Saturday, but it's like all of these things are very much, you know, I think they matter more than some people like to pretend they matter.
Well, you know what? I mean, even going back to, like he said, Mekhi Muse, he worked himself onto the field, but that was through trust. He had a good spring. He had good practices in the spring, then comes in the G-Day, and I guess the staff looked at it and said, wait a minute. We got a guy that can be a returner. We got a guy that can actually fill the hole or fill the space of a Ladd McConkey if he's knocked out a little bit and can't play, right? I mean, early on, he was getting some touches. So you have to develop that confidence in the coaching staff, in your quarterback. And that's why I mentioned early on in the show where if I'm a wide receiver, there is no alpha dog out here right now.
Right.
I mean, you know, practice is wide open. I want to be able to go to my Heisman Trophy candidate quarterback and say, I'm that dude. Brock isn't here. Ladd's not here. The sure hands of Rosemary Jack Saint ain't here. I'm that dude. So this is your chance.
I'm with you.
This is your chance. You get the fans behind you. You get the coaching staff behind you. There's a lot of push that you can get as a young player that maybe didn't get a lot of touches last year. Even a guy like Ra-Ra Thomas, who was obviously one of the guys that people were going to be looking at, taking a lot of catches last year and ended up getting injured and didn't get a lot of touches. Guess what? This is your time because you got Humphrey coming in here, same type of size, Colby, same type of size. All these guys are going to be fighting for touches, and this is the time to show Kirby, to show your coaching staff, that I'm that guy that's going to be accountable, and I'm that guy that's going to be there.
Who's Bobo going to scheme open?
Right.
You know what I mean? They could do something with the ball, you know, because Brock wasn't a regular tight end. He was a yards after catch monster for any
9.6 yards after catch per reception.
That's absurd.
That's a first down.
that's absurd, man. Like, really, he is like – that's what kind of production you're losing. But on the flip side, that's what kind of production becomes open. Like, who's going to step up? Be like, say, hey, I'm him. Like, give me the ball. Is it going to be Oscar Delp at the same position? Like, who's it going to be? You know what I mean? It's there. It's there for the taking. It's like, we lose Brock, and it's like, it's a sad day. But at the same time, it's like this should make a lot of guys hungry. Just jump at the bit, just be like, oh man, how many, how much, what, 600, 700, 800, 900 yards? you know, whatever with the give, depending on the year that just left, you know, in one player. Like, I want that. Give me that. Oh, he's gone. Give me that where he left. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Who's gonna be
absolutely him. And Ladd too, to your point. You know, I mean, like, it was very clear in the SEC championship game, those guys were read one and read two on almost every play. And because they were hurt, you know, I think it kind of hurt the offense. But like Dom Lovett, you know, that dude really the last back half of the year, like he was 7-11, man. He was open all day. Yeah. And, you know, he can be your number one receiver. He was the number one receiver at Mizzou. Like, you have all these guys. Ra-Ra Thomas led Mississippi State in receiving in an air raid offense. Obviously a different system, but now he's got, you know, a full 12 months under his belt in the system. Like, there are all these players who have a shot. Colby Young was a contested catch monster in the ACC. And for all of the great things that Georgia has done on offense, you know, from Monken into last year with Bobo, it's been a while since Georgia has had a true, like, boundary receiver that can just go and, you know, be that kind of back shoulder fade guy or go, you know, go really grab it. Yeah, it was – I mean, Pickens had that ability.
He just didn't get a whole lot of George, you know what I mean?
Right. He was hurt a lot. Exactly, yeah. Yeah, and I mean, like, I think, you know, the exciting thing for – it always felt to me last year like Georgia with Ra-Ra Thomas was sort of like using games to get him – it was like we were building towards, I thought, the Alabama game because that was going to be the best secondary they faced, and that was going to be the game where it was like you need that guy who even when he's covered, he's not covered because he can out-jump you and go get those contested catches. And they didn't have him. He was hurt. And, like, I look at, you know, this coming season, if you can have Thomas and Colby Young doing those types of things, like, if you can have two guys out there that can play the boundary, like, mm-hmm. I know that the stat nerds, who I am kind of one of at times, like, I know that people are like, oh, the goal line fade is a low percentage play. It gets a lot higher percentage when you can put one to the right and one to the left, and somebody's got to be in one-on-one going to that back pylon in the red zone, right? Like, there's all these problems that start happening when you can really play the boundaries on either side at the same time. And I think that is on the table for Georgia in 2024 if these guys kind of hit the way that they could. I mean, yeah, like this could really genuinely be the start of Carson Beck's Heisman campaign on Saturday in a lot of ways, because he's going to go out there with all this new receiving talent and he gets to kind of show off his new toys, test drive them a little bit, you know, maybe not get the RPMs too far up, but just flash a little bit, you know, just little 100-yard stretches here and there, and then put those guys away and make sure they stay healthy and come back in the fall. Back. And there you put go. The yes. Yeah, and that's man. The other thing is Georgia's, from a spring practice injury standpoint, I'm knocking on wood because I don't want to jinx anybody, but I don't remember a time since Kirby Smart has been around where Georgia has gotten to this point in the spring
with
less injuries. So that in and of itself is probably the most important thing.
That's living and learning, though. You know, I think, was it last spring? They said he worked that team harder than typically, harder than he had before. And had a lot of guys hurt. You know, we had, you know, and shout out to Cash, but he had to play last year. You know what I mean? I don't know if that was in the cards before then. You know what I mean? But yeah, I'm glad to hear it's really, like you said, it's kind of it was kind of abnormal to not have. I'm not even gonna speak that. I'm just glad they're healthy.
Well, let's be honest, fellas. I mean, I think Kirby probably looked at this team last year is that they needed it more than it, more than the last two teams that held themselves more accountable. When I say the last two teams, I'm talking about the back-to-back national champions. They had some bona fide leaders that held guys more accountable, in my opinion, than last year's team. You had a talented team, and I think Kirby felt that he had to actually put his foot on the pedal a little bit more, maybe push some more of these guys, and hopefully they themselves would kind of jump into high gear, but they never really did. I mean, even though they were extremely talented, there was a lot of meat left on the bone from a lot of those games last year where they could have dominated. Even the game against Alabama where people were like, oh, man, you know, they laid an egg. They could have won that game and really dominated that game, in my opinion, relatively easy because I thought that we were a much more talented team than Alabama last year. So to me, it actually says they're doing what they're supposed to be doing in the offseason. Now, I haven't been privy to be at practice. I know, Graham, you've posted a lot of different practice notes. But to me, it seems like this team is taking 2024 to heart and going into the college football era saying, you know what, we want to make a statement. We want to be that team to start off this thing. What have you heard coming out of spring practice? Obviously, like you mentioned, this will be practice number 15. But who are those guys that people should be listening for, looking for, and hoping for in 2024?
You know what? Let me interject. Just because something I mentioned before Graham got on, that buddy of mine that, you know, he's an ex-SEC player, went to one of our rivals, you know, and NFL guy, so I trust his opinion. He was able to go, you know, sit in and practice in some meetings because of relationships he has with the staff. And this was early on. This is one of the first practices. And this is what he texts me. He was like, you know, he had called me and I didn't pick up. And he wanted to tell me just how good Georgia looked. and for a few of things, this the short version. He was, he said, cuz that transferred from Florida, the running back, he's going to have a big year. He said, Beck looked like he's going to have a big year. He said, defense is going to be young in the secondary. He said, but the front and the backers should be elite as usual. He mentioned Bowles by name. He said he's going to have a big year. I thought it was interesting, too, because I hadn't heard a lot about him. But he said that day. Now, this was early on. He said he was working with the ones. He looked really good. And he said they're concerned about corner, and but he said again, like most people, he said Kirby is the GOAT. He said, you know, he said just sitting in staff meetings and how he holds everybody accountable and don't care who you are, and he was just really impressed about everything that he saw. He said he went to another practice before Georgia's. He said intensity. He said intensity was the same, but he said the Jimmys and the Joes were very different. and he just talked about how Kirby's interaction with recruits and like his expectations for recruits, and like they can't, even as a recruit, you can't be about no BS. Like you got to be on your stuff if you're in that building. And I thought that was just some cool insight that, you know, I'm an expert. I never even been behind the doors like that yet, you know, since I've left. And so, I want to get your thoughts on that. Does that line up with what you've heard and seen?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think there's two things, right? And like continuity can be a great thing, right? Like that was a big thing at SEC Media Days last year that Georgia talked to, or that Kirby talked about, was like, you know, we won back-to-back national titles and we've lost one assistant. You know, we lost Monk into the NFL, but we replaced him with a guy who was already on our staff and Bobo, who was a Georgia grad, and there is all these Georgia grads there, and like all of that is good stuff, right? But there is also, you know, when you have all that continuity and then you win back-to-back national titles, it's like you have the same voices and you've had all this success. And I think that's why last spring practice probably was so intense, to kind of answer back to what you were saying, Lamar, is because I think you got to find something to get fired up about. And it's hard to find things to get fired up about when there's not necessarily new blood, which is a good thing, but it can also, you know, there could be advantages to new blood. And so let's fast forward to this spring. You lost to Alabama, and that cost you a shot at doing something that nobody's done and winning three straight titles. And then you also, you have a lot of kind of churn on this staff. You've got Josh Crawford come in. You've got James Coley come back. You've got T-Rob come over from Alabama. I think that can be a good thing. You know, I think Kirby is so organized from the top down in terms of making sure that all of these guys know how to do their jobs. And spring practices and fall camp will be as well too. But like, what's different, I think, in a lot of ways about Georgia from anywhere right now, especially now that Saban is retired, is that Kirby is also coaching the coaches in a lot of situations. And you know, Georgia, they bring high school coaches and stuff in, obviously, this time of year for different things. And I heard a story over the weekend of somebody that was there for practice, and Georgia was running, you know, kind of some procedural type stuff, trying to make sure they had special teams down, and they had the wrong personnel on the field for a certain special teams moment, and the official at practice threw the flag, and Kirby made a comment of like, don't throw the flag on the players, throw the flag on the coaches, because they don't have the right players on the field. Obviously, there was a couple expletives mixed in there as well, but it's like, you know, Kirby, when he's got that big microphone, that big bullhorn at practice, like anybody is fair game, you know, and that creates this culture of competition, you know, and there's a sense of urgency that breeds excellence, and it's this self-perpetuating thing. And I think to George's point, like, there's new blood on the coaching staff. There's some of these new players that have come in from the transfer portal. Like, Arian Smith has had a phenomenal spring. I think he was kind of the MVP of one of the scrimmages a couple of weeks ago. It's like, that is a guy who I think some people thought he might leave this offseason when you brought in all of these wide receiver transfers, and he kind of was on the outside at certain points last year. Now it looks like, you know, he's maybe kind of playing in a way that they haven't seen him. You know, he's maybe a little more physical than he's been at times in the past. So I think there is sort of enough young talent that's come in to press some of these old guys and new coaches, and that dynamic is healthy. And I also think that you're in a spot where you do, to George's point, like, you just have so much talent that if you do slack off, there's not a chance of you getting on the field, right? Like, there's maybe been, you know, 2 to 3 players in the Kirby Smart era that were just so overly talented that, you know, they might be able to get away with that. Like, Jalen Carter, you know, was probably one of those guys where, like, Jalen Carter at 70% speed is still going to get it done. Yeah, he's just a freak. But, you know, Georgia has a lot of that kind of mixture right now of these raw, young, talented guys. Like, C.J. Allen had a really good freshman year. You know, he's played a ton of snaps in the SEC championship game, looked really good at times in the Orange Bowl, you know, came in the Missouri game, like, did a lot of really good things. And there were, you know, people that were commenting on, wow, he's got this incredible range sideline to sideline and all this speed. But it's like, dude, he played last year with like a lot of baby fat, for lack of a better term, on him. You know, it's like all of a sudden that guy's cut up and he's coming out. And it's just, all these guys, this Georgia football machine, it continues to kind of elevate them as they go, because it's like, okay, well, we hit these benchmarks in the weight room last offseason, and now we're going to go after these. Robert Robinson is down to 7% body fat at 240 pounds or 230 maybe. But like, that is insane, dude. If you like anybody that understands body fat, like that guy is going to be a problem for a lot of people. And, you know, he's out here like, you've got 7% body fat at 230, 235. And like, you know, you've got Ellis Robinson.
Crazy.
Yeah, he probably does. It's like you got Ellis Robinson come in, right, who was the number one player in the class for some services, consensus number one corner. And Georgia does what they call like a millennial Oklahoma drill, right, where they spread things out and they try to block on the perimeter. And, you know, he goes out and tries to tackle this monster with 7% body fat and 235 pounds up high, and it went about how you think it would go, right? And so it's just like everybody gets humbled at Georgia because there's too many talented players around you for it not to happen sometimes. But I think the vibes are good right now. Like, I think that there is a lot of energy, and you have some of these players who are kind of stepping into these leadership roles, like Tate Ratledge and Carson, who, you know, to your point earlier, Lamar, like, you have some of these guys that I think, instead of trying to sort of manufacture adversity or force people into certain roles, it's just sort of all happening naturally. And a lot of it is a product of being pissed off of how last season ended.
You know, we talk negatively about the portal, but this is actually where the portal is actually positive in Georgia's favor moving forward, because it is such a grueling camp. It is such a grueling program that, you know, iron sharpens iron. It allows you to kind of remove the dead weight as well if guys want to hop in. And I understand that everybody has their favorite players. Everybody has those guys they follow. If you're a recruiting nut like some of us to follow the recruits and things like that, but then they jump into the portal, you're a little bit disappointed. But if you're a fan of the program, you also understand that the guys that remain are forged in fire, man. I mean, those guys are ready to step up and handle the things that they're supposed to handle. And you mentioned this wide receiving crew. This is going to get nasty. And let's be honest, man. They still got some numbers that they have to cut, quote unquote cut, to get down to a certain number when it comes down to the actual season. So the portal opens up on April 15th, and it's open up, for 15 days, closes on May 1st. So
it's
there's some guys that you're going to see leave the program. You might be surprised about, but they can't transfer inside the conference, which is a good thing, but you also can't get guys from inside the conference. But let that be a little nugget for some people. There's some guys that can transfer out, and you will see them transfer out, but it's going to be crazy. And I really like the competition that they have going on right now, especially at the receiver position. What's that?
I mean, linebacker too, man. You got all these young guys.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. Graham, the speed is tremendous. I mean, Foss said it earlier. You know, if you can't run the 100, if you don't run the 100 yard dash on a track team, Kirby don't want
you. That's real deal. Like,
you know, Graham, he don't want you.
Like sub 11.
Yeah.
That's when he was playing linebacker.
Yeah. 10-700 meter. I mean, Raylan Wilson came in at like, I think
he was like a 10-3. He was something.
A 10-3 and like 230 pounds.
And to put that in perspective, though, for most fans that are listening, you're not running 100 yards. You're not running 100 meters. You're running sideline to sideline. You're running within 5 yards to 20 yard spaces. That cuts off a lot of offenses. That shuts down a lot of explosive plays where teams can't go over the top on you, can't get certain angles on certain teams and certain players, as long as you're playing your particular position and playing it well. So, and we know how well they're coached up on the defensive side of the ball. So it's a scary proposition to play against Georgia right now. I'm looking forward to Saturday. I'm looking forward in a big way. You're going to say something, Graham?
No, I was just saying with the portal, to your point that you were making a moment ago, like, Just remember the door does swing both ways, you know, and you will see guys leave this spring, but I would not be surprised if Georgia, you know, I mean, Kirby's been pretty transparent that he wants a four scholarship quarterback on the roster. And I wouldn't be surprised if that's a guy who can, you know, start in 2025 if the right player comes on the market. Like, if you, it's weird. It's a change, right? It's almost like the baseball hot stove now, but it's like, you can't really be a true college football fan at this point without paying attention to the portal. And especially, you know, when you're talking about like, not just the implications for the 2024 season, but some of these guys are going to get kind of stacked onto rosters, you know, to be impactful for 2025 as well. So I'm very interested to see where Georgia is a buyer and a seller, so to speak, in the portal over the next couple of weeks, because it's going to shift dynamics for fall camp, is my prediction. Yeah.
I mean, well, we've already kind of heard nuggets of it, right? We've already heard where a lot of publications and a lot of people have actually spoken out saying, okay, Gunner has to play well in this spring game. He's got to show that if things happen, and Lord forbid, you know, our guy comes out of the bubble, you know, out of the bubble wrap and the glass and things, something happens, that he could step into this offense and at least keep it afloat or make it run and make this thing hum like it's supposed to. And if you're not that guy, I mean, obviously, I'm sorry. It's a production-based business, and they're going to look at guys that can produce. And Kirby would be looking for, and I would be looking for somebody that can come in that could be an avid, you know, a great backup to Carson Beck, and maybe that guy that can compete for a starting position the following year. I mean, heck, you're not recruiting people to just take up seats. You always want competition. Heck, I'm sure Kirby would like to have somebody come in and compete with Carson and maybe beat him out. Because if you're that dude, you're that dude. It just is what it is. But you have to be on your square right now. When you're part of a program like this, you got to be about your business from day one until the day that you leave. And that's just the way it is.
That's right. No, that's exactly right. I think
listen, this is
– it's constant competition, and you can upgrade your roster at any time. And
I'm telling you, man, this is every – it seems like every so often I get pro football vibes from what's going on in college right now. Like, there's always somebody looking to take your job. Like, and like, is that's how it that, – that's where we are now. And I'm not saying it's a bad thing. It's just it's a reality check. You know what I mean? Someone's always looking to take your job. Like, it's free agency is real in college now, and they can replace you very quickly, just like in the NFL. So, like you said, you got to be on your stuff at all times, and it's and just like the NFL, it's a job interview at all times. When you step over that line to get on the go on the field, that's a job interview for 31 other teams. In college, a lot more teams. You know what I mean? So, yeah, that's what these guys are dealing with now.
And Foss, I'm going to take it a step further. You said it's a job interview. It's a job interview in practice. It's a job interview you know, in spring camps, working out, everything. Think about this. Amarius Mims, if we transition a little bit to the NFL, it's being looked at as a top 15 pick to a third round pick, quite honestly, just because of the amount of time he's been on the field. Or as some people have said, as I'm listening today, maybe a potential bust. And the reason why they say that is because 800 snaps. But this is what the pundits say. This is how it's actually flipped back around. They say, wait a minute. He plays at Georgia. He practices against pros every day. So it's a job interview for you at all moments. As long as you're on your square and you're doing what you're doing, you're going to get that opportunity. You're going to get that big time call. If he was playing at Western Kentucky and it's a guy with 800 snaps and he's 6'6", 340 and runs a 40 and 5 flat, he's not necessarily getting that same look. He's not getting that same attention. But because you're at Georgia, it's elevated and people believe in you. So you better be on your job. You better be on your P's and Q's, making sure things are happening, because as long as you do that, you're going to get that opportunity. It goes back to the great teams of Miami that when they were flooding people into the NFL, they were like, oh my gosh, dude's only started half a season, but he was going up against bona fide Hall of Famers every day in practice. That's the way this program is. Same thing with Alabama when they were churning out guys, putting people into the NFL. They were going up against bona fide NFL players and Hall of Famers. That's the way this program is. And the way the portal and the way college football is now, if you can build a program like that, man, it just pays many more dividends for the players that are within that program and those guys that get that next level opportunity. But speaking of which, Foss, because you brought this thing up before we get up out of here, did you guys hear about that that 80-team super conference idea? I wanted to bring that up, and I didn't want to know your thoughts. I know Graham probably listened to it because Graham knows everything. Just call Graham. But the 80-team super conference, and then they would have a tier two conference for like the mid-majors and the teams that don't really have the ability to so-called quote-unquote compete. What are your thoughts on maybe a super conference of 80 teams and then just battling it out, man? It's like Gladiator.
That's bullshit, man. It is. I mean, look, I think it says a lot, you know, the group that was making that proposal, I think neither the SEC or the Big Ten or maybe even the Big 12 met with them. I think that it was a ploy for the ACC to try to find a way to save itself from the impending destruction that's coming.
Facts.
But I think that we are trending towards some sort of natural schism in the sport where these teams that are going to be, like, especially as these NIL laws evolve and those things probably trend more and more towards being handled in-house, then you are going to have this natural split of schools that want to spend money and resources to be good at football and schools that are really just there to collect television paychecks, like, you know, you're like half the ACC is, right? Everyone's always like, well, SEC is going to get rid of Vanderbilt. They're not going to get rid of Vanderbilt because having a private school in the conference allows you to not be subject to Freedom of Information Act releases. So, like, they're going to carry some of this dead weight along with them to this next iteration of the sport, whatever that looks like. But I think if you're talking about a realistic super conference for college football, then it's a lot less than 80 teams. Right, because there's not 80 teams out there that are participating in these facility wars, and I mean there's only I think there's less than 60 teams that were considered Power Five before the destruction of the Pac-12 happened. So I think there's still some more stuff that's going to have to shake out before we get to a spot where we're really talking about a legit kind of separation in the FBS. But I think it'll happen because the difference in the paychecks that the SEC and the Big Ten and, you know, anyone that kind of gets grouped in with those two are going to get, it's just going to be such a huge amount of money that it's going to be harder than ever for, like, the Boise's and, you know, the, like, whatever your favorite G5 upstart of the last 20, 30 years has been to really come out and play with the big dogs. Especially with the portal, meaning that your roster gets raided twice a year. So I don't know where that line is going to be drawn, obviously, but I think if we're drawing it between, you know, who's serious and who's not serious, then it's already kind of been drawn, right? Like, let's just go look at who recruits blue chips. I mean, we've never seen a team with less than half their roster have blue chips that won a national title. Like, you have to hit 50% blue chip players to win national title. There's only about 16 teams that do that a year anyway. So we're talking about who's really serious. It's much smaller. Now, The cool thing about NIL, in my opinion, is that, like, Mizzou just beat out, you know, Georgia for a quarterback that Georgia wanted, and it's because they're taking a five-star or two every year that's a high-profile kid, and they're throwing a ton of resources at him. They're throwing so much money at him that, you know, that would be stupid for him to say no, even if it is the difference in between competing for national championships and probably not competing for national championships as a college player. But, you know, they're on the come up. Like, they're going to be in the playoff conversation for this 12-team playoff probably next year. And so, like, there might be a little bit of expansion at the top, you know. More teams signed five stars this year than any other year in the past because of NIL, I think. But, you know, there's a large difference between getting one and signing seven a year for 4 years in a row, you know.
You know, Graham, to comment on what you were saying, because I was going to bring up Mizzou. Mizzou is one of those schools that they're being forward-thinking right now. They're mm-hmm. saying that, look, everything's about to shift. Everything's about to change. And either we get on get on board, or we're going to get left behind. And some of these programs better understand that and understand it quickly. If you don't get the backing of the financial people behind you already to get those collectives rolling and the coffers growing in terms of finances, you're going to get left behind. You're going to be one of those teams on the outside saying, well, why am I not in this 40-team conference? Or why am I not? Because you haven't proven yourself to be. We already know the blue bloods are going to be there. We already know the ones that are on the fringe of being blue bloods, and the ones that compete in this facility war are always going to be there, because the money's always going to – it's just going to flow. But who are going to – my question would be, who are those next 10 to 15 programs where the money's going to come from the state, whether the money's going to come from their alumni to say, look, we want to be competitive and we're going to make sure that we pay for our players to be there. Because let's just be honest, it's pay for play until the structure is completely changed around. But I'm like you. I think 80 teams was crazy. It was asinine. It's an asinine thought. 40, maybe. I mean, it's just going to look just like the NFL in a certain way. You know, everybody's just going to be regionalized. They're going to have their core rivals. They're going to keep those and maintain those, but it's just going to be basically semi-pro football for college nuts, college junkies, because you're never going to have those crossovers that go from completely being a college fan to all of a sudden they're a pro fan, or a pro fan going back to being a college fan. Those core individuals are still going to maintain and be there and always follow the sport, follow the grouping, follow the 40 teams. But it's just going to be more intense at that point once they actually break this thing down. How far away we are, I don't know. Probably another 5 to 10 years away from a mega conference, super conference like that, until the Pac-12 yeah. and the ACC really reshape. But we'll see. It's going to be interesting, though. It's going to be interesting, and I'm looking forward to the change. I mean, I didn't know if I would be able to change with NIL, quite honestly. You see the gray? You see the salt and pepper in here? I'm a traditionalist, man. I love college football the way it was. Like Nick liked it.
Yeah, no, I feel you, dog.
You know what I mean? I liked it like that. But now it's a little bit different. You know, I got my favorite players I don't want to ever see jump in the portal and things like that, and guys coming in that you don't know. But I've adjusted, so everybody else just might as well adjust and get on this you know, this magic carpet ride.
You like to watch the Andy Griffith Show when you get home from work too?
Hey man, we ain't doing that today, Graham.
Hey, that Bernie Price, man, he's got jokes.
Well, here's the thing, man. I do like Andy Griffith, but what we got going on in the house right now, we got black comedy going on right now.
I love that.
Black comedy. We got Everybody Love Chris. We got Martin on rotation. We got nothing but black comedy going on right now.
That's awesome. I like that. That's awesome.
What you got, Foss? You on mute.
Yeah, talk to us.
Put the youngins on some old school, man. Put on some What's Happening.
Yes.
Now put them on some Jeffersons, you know.
It's all on rotation. We got the Jeffersons, we got What's Happening. We got different strokes. Like, we got all that going on right now.
My all-time favorite is Sanford and Son.
Oh, you know it.
You got to put them on to some Sanford and Son.
You know it, dummy.
Fred is one of the all-time characters in all of television. All-time.
Yeah, What about Family Matters, man? Family Matters. I was raised on Family
Matters. Yes, Family. I grew up on Family Matters.
Carl Winslow.
Yep.
Love Carl Winslow.
Matters.
Well, hey, man, you guys are going to be at G-Day. I'm a little bit jealous. Like I said, I'll be sitting here working out the kid and then getting ready for a game the next day, so I wish I was there.
I got to decide how I'm going to take G-Day in. Am I going to roam or whatever? That should be – am I going to hit the stands, sideline? What am I going to do? I don't know.
You were a celebrity.
Should I leave Graham to work alone? Should
I want to come see you, man. We'll link up offline, but you gotta let me know if you're coming. You know when you're coming into town and all that stuff. We got a little. Do you mind if I plug a couple things real quick, Lamar?
Of course, man. Always plug.
All right. So Friday night, we're doing a little players' lounge party tailgate thing at Creature Comforts. From 5:30 to 8, and Aaron Murray and myself will be doing kind of a live chat type deal. So come hang. There will be a bunch of former Georgia Lettermen there, I'm told. So, you know, come see people that are actually famous, and you can also hang out with me a little bit on the side. And then Saturday morning at the Hyatt Place in downtown Athens, we're also doing like an autograph signing deal with Javon Bullard and Marcus Roseme, Jack Saint. So if you're coming into town the morning of the game, maybe from out of town, and you want to come through and see those guys, and I'm staying there at the hotel. So, I'm gonna come hang out a little bit and kick it before heading into G-Day. So if you're around, come say hello to any and all of us in the Players Lounge family this weekend.
Foss, you see how he threw himself in there? Like, I'm still going to be there. Like, he's big now. He's big now.
Foss. Nah.
He's being humble, big, but he's throwing it out there. I love it.
It's Big Graham. big Graham.
Yeah. You're Big G. You're Big G. I'm not Big G.
That's Big G. I just get in where I fit in.
Yeah, no, man, a lot of good stuff is happening, man. 100 Sanford, the Players Lounge, a lot of good things are happening. I mean, it's basically quote unquote the off season, but it's still the end season. But when this real season starts, stuff is going to explode for the network, for the program, for everything that everybody's doing affiliated with the show. So with that being said, man, unless you guys got anything else. We did get a recruit. We did get Mason Short, who committed to UGA. I know we had, you know, some decommits a few weeks back since we had not been on Justice Theory.
Big fellas like that. That's how.
Yeah,
I'm always excited.
That's a big get too. Mason Short was a big get. You know, he was an Alabama recruit, decommitted, but you know we got him back in the fold here at Georgia. But a lot of big names that are on the horizon, man. A lot of guys that have been predicted lately in the last 24 to 48 hours. A lot of five stars is going to boost that rating. Right now, I think we're ranked number 8 by most publications for the 25 class, but that's about to get up to like number 3 or number 2 or number 3 after the next couple days. But with that being said, fellas, it's been real as always. We'll see you at 100 Sanford after G-Day. We'll talk to you. We're out.
Yes, sir.
Thank you for listening to the 100 Sanford Podcast. Tune in weekly to hear fresh content from the 100 Sanford Podcast every Thursday, but also with some pop-up shows every now and then as news breaks. You can also follow the content on our website, www.100sanfordpodcast.com, and email us at dogs@100sanfordpodcast.com. Lastly, reach out to us on social media streams. For Twitter, it's @100Sanford, but on IG, TikTok, Facebook, and other accounts, it's 100 Sanford Podcast. All right, folks, that's it. And as usual, see you at 100 Sanford.